My superpower is my calmness. And so if somebody criticizes or critiques or throws something my way, if they're right, I will learn from it and take from it and try to do better. And if I disagree, I'll just think that's their opinion and politely try to find a resolution and move forward. And so I think that's just developing confidence. And developing confidence doesn't just come from like an arrogance of having done something for a long time. Developing confidence is doing the self-work to continue.
Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission? Hi, Lori. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for having me, I guess. Very excited.
I'm so excited for our chat because, you know, as I mentioned just off camera or before I pressed record, I've been following the work that you've been doing, and it's the impact that you and your company have had on, you know, the film landscape, but also just the cultural landscape here. And as we all know, culture shapes reality and has such a huge influence. So I'm so excited for our chat today. Maybe we just start off with an icebreaker. If you had a movie made about your life, who would play you and what genre would it be?
Oh my God, the genre. I've been asked the question before about who would play me. And so, you know, of course, Dare to Dream, since we are in the dream world of movie and storytelling. Laura Dern, I love her so much.
Yes.
And just everything she does, I just think she's classy and cool. And we had her in our office, was it 2 years ago or for The Sun? And I had like a fangirl moment. You know, we get the benefit of meeting a lot of stars in our industry. And I just said to her, like, oh my God, that scene in Big Little Lies when the Meryl Streep says to her, you know, oh, is your nanny with your child? And she says, listen, judgy judge, I work hard so that I can provide for my kids. I was like, I think every working mom in the world swooned at the way you presented that. So she would play me. Of course, Greta Gerwig would direct.
Yes.
And hopefully for that one, she would get the nom for directing that she deserved for Barbie. We've been loving Greta since she did Lady Bird, which we distributed with A24. And I'm a huge fan of her work. Genre is interesting. You'd have to call it, I would call it coming of age for an older woman. For a not older woman, but like, it's not your typical coming of age. I'm not 15 having my first kiss, but I have grown up in the film industry and had to learn how to, you know, find my strengths, overcome my weaknesses, battle through some challenges, and, you know, ultimately succeed, knowing that there's always more to learn. So I would call it adult coming of age. I just made a new genre.
I love it. I love it. There's a whole audience that would feel very, very seen and acknowledged by that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we're here to talk about movies and the business of movies and also our love for them. You've been in the industry for 20 years, serving as the executive vice president at Entertainment One, as well as roles at Alliance Film, Lionsgate, and Maple Pictures, which you founded. And you've also supported some really big heavy hitters through Elevation Pictures, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Imitation Game, Room, Moonlight, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. What drew you to the world of movies initially? Mm-hmm. And was there a movie or actor or even like a scene that was really like the spark for you or really served as like a formative moment for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, I think movies are sort of universally loved. I think whether you're, it's just a business that it's a fantasy world that attracts a lot of people, right? The film and television industry, and it all looks very glamorous. But beyond that, deeper than that, you know, I've always sort of seen the world through rose-colored glasses. And like, even when I was, you know, in junior high and high school, if I was trying on a shirt, I wouldn't just say, do you like this shirt? I'd say, do you see me wearing this shirt sitting at a cafe in Paris, like sipping a latte? And my friends would look at me and be like, what are you talking about? So I just have always, you know, I see things, you know, my husband sometimes says it in a negative way, like not everything is a movie. But yeah, I really see things. I appreciate the way things look and colors and how people are relating. And it takes a while to sort of rein in your passion. And I say this to my kids who are now both university age, like give yourself the time to figure out what attracts you and sort of follow that, but allow yourself to pivot. So I loved storytelling and I loved advertising, like, oh, that ad's very cool. So then I sort of undergrad thought, well, I'm going to do psychology and learn about myself and the world. And then in that, I went to Hebrew University for a year abroad and Middle Eastern things were happening as they do. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm interested in journalism and law. So I sort of played with applying to journalism and law, took that gap year to work at CTV Television Network to get a little bit of experience, and then thought, I'm going to go get a law degree. But my brain was already thinking, this is a strong degree to get, but I like the media industries. So of course you take constitutional law and corporate law and this and that, but I focused on entertainment law and I ran the entertainment and sports law workshop. And the more I immersed myself in going to the conferences and meeting the people and loving the industry, for me, practicing entertainment law was a good entree into the world. You know, when people call me and say, oh, I love the film industry, I want to get into it, my first question always is like, do you sort of know what part? You know, I even spoke to someone yesterday because I always love to try to give back. It's like, do you want to be an actor? Do you want to be a screenwriter? Do you want to do physical production? You know, do you want to be in the accounting side of things? Do you want to be on the legal business affairs side of things? Do you want to direct? Because there's so many different paths. And this kid actually was an interesting example. He wasn't sure. He's like, I like acting, but I also like entertainment law. So while I'm young, maybe I'll go do a few roles, but I'm also in school. So maybe I'll apply to law school. And I think that's really smart. Sort of when you're young, take the time to dabble, allow yourself to pivot once your passion is leading you somewhere. And the best advice I have for everybody, including, you know, all ages that talk to me, is the sooner that, you know, you can reinvent your life tomorrow. Just if you want to be fit, start working out tomorrow and eating better and getting better sleep and sunlight. And it gets a little harder, not that you can't reinvent yourself when you're older. But I do have 45-year-old lawyers calling me saying, like, I've been a real estate lawyer for 15 years and I hate it and I want to come work for a film company. That's hard. Because once you're in, you know, you get the golden handcuffs, you're making a salary, you've got a mortgage and kids.
Yeah.
So if you really feel like you love the film industry, get into the film industry doing whatever, and then just start to grow. So back to my entree in film, I was worked at Osler's as a lawyer when I graduated, and then I got a job in-house at Cinepix Film Properties, which became Lionsgate, and then grew from there, from the in-house business part to the entrepreneurial part of running Maple, which was bought by Alliance and Anyone, to co-founding and running with my co-president Noah Siegel, Elevation. And I love the business of film. You know, it'd be fun to be in front of the camera or directing, but I love the business of film, and that's my way of being in that world. And I think it's a really fun, fascinating, exciting world to be in. It is still work. Right? They call it work for a reason. Not every day is glamorous. Can ask our publicists, but just find something you're passionate about and chase that. And so for me, from the beginning of getting into the media space and chasing that in my path through law, just being in this, in working with these people in this space is my passion. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's such an interesting road to that you've taken to get to where you are today. I want to unpack that a little bit later too, but I'm curious from your perspective, what do you think makes a great story worth telling and worth investing in and worth amplifying from your POV?
Yeah, also a very good question. So when we started Elevation, the name Elevation actually is because you sort of elevated content. So I don't know if everyone understands this, but basically the studios you know, Warner, Disney, Fox, MGM, Paramount, Sony. The studios are basically called the majors, and they develop product, green light, make, cover the whole budget of the film, cover the whole marketing of the film, and release worldwide. Everything else is called independent film, and meaning like independent of a studio. There's mini majors like Lionsgate and A24. We in Canada, so Elevation, we don't do studio films where they distribute all over the world. Sometimes we'll pre-buy a film like Paw Patrol and then Paramount will release it. So we do work with studios. But basically the films that are told in the independent space, the studios really focus on the tentpole films, meaning all four quadrants, male, female, young, old, put up the tent, sell a lot of tickets, sell a lot of popcorn. The independent space gets to be a little bit more niche and a little bit more innovative. And that's, I think, why you're seeing, like, I'm a member of the Academy and you're seeing in the Oscar noms, you know, it's, of course, Oppenheimer, it's a feat of a movie, and Barbie, but The Zone of Interest, which is an important movie with Jonathan Glazer directing, and Anatomy of a Fall, which is a foreign language film with Justine getting, a lot of awards and Sandra getting a lot of heat. So these smaller, independent, international films that sort of tap into the zeitgeist and tell relatable stories, and it might not be for all four quadrants. So, and sometimes they are. So Lady Bird will lean more into the mother-daughter experience, but be a very relatable snapshot of a mother-daughter relationship. And Moonlight, which went on to win Academy Award for Best Picture, despite that little snafu, is a very important traditional coming-of-age story about a young Black boy with a single mother who's troubled sort of finding himself. And these are the stories that are available in the independent space, in addition to some big action thrillers, the ones that don't go studio but get distributed by the independent sector. But really the films that stand out to us are the ones that move, educate, enlighten, and are maybe not appealing to all four quadrants, but really important stories to be told. And then sometimes those catch a wave and catch a zeitgeist and become Everything Everywhere All at Once and win 9 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. So that's the fun of the independent space. There's a little bit more risk-taking and a little bit more innovation, and that's kind of where the magic is.
Yeah, I guess building on that, like what does innovation look like within the realm of film and the movie business, specifically within the lane that you're working within?
Yeah. So, it's kind of like, to me, it's like, I'm an avid reader, right? I've been in a book club for 20 years and I'm always, and social media, you consume information, although you have to be careful about just getting overloaded with one-sided information. So I like to remain sort of in touch with what's in the zeitgeist and what people are interested in. Where the innovation comes in is something like Everything Everywhere All at Once, right? When you read that script, and just to make it clear, like we buy films before that's made. We will go, let's say, to the Berlin Film Market coming up, and we'll get 40 scripts that we read in the independent space, where they're packaged with, here's the script, here's the director, here are the actors, here. And so we're shooting this day, here's the budget, this is how much we want from you. And we'll kind of narrow those 40 down to 15 we're interested and 8 that we're actually going to offer on and 5 that we'll get, because there is some competition. Some sell worldwide to Netflix or a studio or whatever. And we also acquire films at the finished film stage, where we go to a festival like Sundance and see a finished film. The risk about buying a film at the pre-financing stage is that you don't know what it's going to look like on execution. You just hope it's really going to work. And sometimes you get very pleasantly surprised, Everything Everywhere. And I won't put down any of our babies, but sometimes when you see the finished film, it's like, oh, okay, that, whatever. Yeah, not going to be a huge blockbuster, but still great. We'll do what we can. At the finished film stage, of course, when somebody sees something that's unbelievable, that's great. But like at Sundance, our team loved several films, but knew right away, like, what's inside? Okay, that's going to be snapped up by a studio. And so it's difficult for us to compete against Paramount, who might buy North America, or the world, or Netflix, who might buy the world, or Apple, who might buy the world. And so that's why we're very involved at the pre at the pre-financing stage when we're pre, and also Canadian films is a huge component of what we do as Canadian distributors helping bring together that financing. So when you read a script, why I mentioned books, you know, are you invested in the characters? Are you, you know, sometimes when you read a book by page three, you already care what's going to happen. You can't put it down. And some books by page 50 sort of aren't rooting for anyone. And it's like, oh, it's a chore to finish it. Yeah, it's sort of the same with the script. So somebody gets you, something excites you. What is this world they're building? What is this relationship I care about? Where is this relationship going? What happened to make this person act like that? How is it going to get resolved? And unlike Hollywood films, which typically the romance ends with a happy ending, sometimes independent films don't. Sometimes the whole film is about a divorce that's slow and painful, and but it's relatable in a different way because it's like, I went through that. Now I can see it on film. And of course, representation on film matters, right? And the studios are trying to do that as well. But in the independent space, you know, telling Indigenous stories and telling stories from Black creators and LGBTQ stories and that kind of live a little bit more in the independent space and are really where fresh voices are coming. And that's why I love, like, I sit on the TIFF board and I love the TIFF, you know, talent to watch. And Sundance is amazing because the base of Sundance is the Sundance Institute and the Sundance Lab, where they're like finding funding for new voices and new ways of filming. And in fact, we, Neon, bought this film worldwide, which we get through our deal with them, Presence, directed by Soderbergh, which the whole film is told from the perspective of the presence, the ghost. And so you literally start like that in a closet, looking at the family moving in, and then the family's moving in. And it's like, wow, this is different. I've never seen a ghost story from the perspective of the ghost. So that's cool. It's like an angle that can excite people to get off their devices and actually go to a movie theater and have a shared experience and hopefully leave and talk about it, learn from it, etc.
As a sidebar, I can't even imagine what the script looked like for Everything Everywhere All at Once, because that movie is just such a one of a kind. And like, I can't even imagine reading the part with like the rocks having dialogue with each other and the googly eyes.
The hot dog fingers.
Oh my gosh. Like, I can't.
Yeah, it was a trippy script. And what's fun is, you know, when you're a fun, scrappy, independent company, and I had seen Swiss Army Man, the Daniels previous film, which played Sundance, which was a, talk about innovative, like innovative leaning to the crazy. Yeah. And then, and there turned out the What video, which we played in our office, and it's like, oh my God. But then at the base of that was, you know, the yin and yang of good and bad and relationships and enjoying where you are in the moment and the mother-daughter relationship. And there was so much to unpack in that script. And then, of course, having A24 on as the distributor, we just knew that they would put their sprinkle dust of perfect marketing and branding and really figure, get this to that young audience that's craving something fresh. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, no, I mean, as big as that movie is, it's also just so at the heart of it, just so intimate and close and very close to you. So I love it. That movie was brilliant. What has your experience in the industry taught you about creating space and opportunity for others and diverse storytelling, just building on kind of what you were talking about just earlier?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it used to be very black and white, where it was like the old person classic Miramax drama for the older crowd and the big action film for the male crowd and the rom-com for the women and then animation for the little ones. And then it sort of, that started to all blur together and be like, let's just tell good stories and not the same stories over and over again, but with a different protagonist or one little tweak, different thing. You know, let's, when studios have a green light committee and they're like, look at Fast and the Furious, that's working really well for them internationally. Well, they're going to do 11 versions of that film because you just know what you're getting. In the independent world, you're not dealing with a budget of $100 million. You know, the budgets range from micro budget 500 to $60 million in the independent space. Most of them live in like the $5 to $30 million space. And so the budgets aren't super crazy. So you can have a little bit more risk taking because you don't need to make $100 million at the box office. You just want to tell a story and hope that that's going to to take off. And so the film Brother, like as an example, which was produced by Damon from Conquering Lion and Clement Virgo, who's an incredible director, and it was based on an award-winning book, and it's set in Scarborough, and it deals with, you know, loss and grieving and violence and different economic communities and the opportunities they have. That was like a no-brainer for us to sign on right at the outset because, you know, those are stories of Toronto that you don't often see, but they're important and relatable and a big part of our culture. And ultimately, again, that's a story about brothers and relationships and coming of age and grief. But set in a world that maybe people haven't seen before on screen. And similarly, Indian Horse, which was brought to us years ago, based on the book by Richard Wagamasi, you know, telling the story of the residential schools. And that for us was also like a no-brainer because it's an important story to be told. And truth be told, we had a little bit of pushback on that film because the producer, Paula Devonshire, is Indigenous. And Richard Wagamasi, when he was alive, chose the director, Stephen Campanelli, to tell his story. Stephen Campanelli was Clint Eastwood's DP, director of photography. So he set all the shots and Clint Eastwood came on as an executive producer. There were some in the community who thought that that film about an Indigenous story based on a book by an Indigenous writer should have had an Indigenous director. We had a little bit of a discussion there because, you know, my sister's adopted. She's Indigenous. I don't think only Indigenous people can tell Indigenous stories. Of course, you want to make room because if their stories get told by a filmmaker, what story? But, you know, like if I was a director, can I only make movies about a 50-year-old Jewish white woman who works at a company? That's very limiting, right? And so I think Richard Wagamasi chose that director and thought that that was an important story to tell. But it is navigating like who tells the story? How do we get the story told? And one thing I felt very proud about that movie is that they did use, there was one actor in it, Dan Stee, I forget, that was well noted. But the rest were just like, you know, new talent that was found. And was the acting the best it's ever been? No, because we didn't have Leonardo DiCaprio in there. But the voice to me was the young boy who actually got his hair cut on screen. And that was actually very devastating for him. And they had to walk him through that this is an important part of the role and he didn't have to do it. They could have done a wig. And all of those things. And when we premiered the film at TIFF, we did have the elders there and they did do a smudge ceremony. And, you know, so it gets very tricky, like who tells the story and how. And that's a landscape that all independents are sort of navigating through. Mm. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is to figure out, like, let's just figure out how to get these stories told because they're important. And they're a part of for the Canadian films, particularly a part of our fabric of who we are. We're always looking for Canadian culture, like what is our Canadian culture right now? Hockey, whatever. But our culture is also our history. And it's important for people to share in those stories.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As you've navigated your career, have you always had a strong sense of self and voice and perspective? Or how long did it take for you to find your voice and the impact that you would want to have through your work?
Yeah, another good question. You're a good interviewer. you know, as a woman, I've had some challenges in the film industry, and I don't think it's singular to the film industry. You know, the Me Too movement came out of the film industry, I guess, because there were stars who had a platform and could speak. And traditionally, there were some people that were attracted to the industry for, it's almost like Scarface, first you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the women. So there was a little bit of a male, a boys club in Hollywood, so to speak, that as a strong, educated woman, I had to navigate my way up. But then I think it applies to every industry, which is, I'm not saying I'm at the top of the mountain of my career. I still have places to go, But I've gotten to this level because I liken it to climbing a mountain. So everyone is climbing a mountain and you're carrying some rocks and new rocks get added, a child, another child, an aging parent, your spouse, whatever's happening with that. And so you're carrying all these weights and more and more. And there's also people at the top of the mountain throwing rocks at you, like, get off my mountain. There's not room for all of us. And at first, when I got a few shots in the beginning, I'd be like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Imposter syndrome, invisible audience, whatever. I don't know what I'm doing. And then as I got a little stronger, I was like, no, I know what I'm doing. And I'll just be Wonder Woman and put on my bracelets and deflect the shots coming at me. And now, and I think this just comes with age and experience, my superpower is my calmness. And so if somebody criticizes or critiques or throws something my way, if they're right, I will learn from it and take from it and try to do better. And if I disagree, I'll just think that's their opinion and politely try to find a resolution and move forward. And so I think that's just developing confidence. And developing confidence doesn't just come from like an arrogance of having done something for a long time. Developing confidence is doing the self-work to continue. So if you're stressed, do meditation and yoga and go for a walk. And if you want to succeed, you've got to be strong. So work out and eat healthy and don't fall into vices. And also, it takes a village. So create your girlfriends, your work friends, your outside work friends. Like, I don't slight anybody for giving up halfway through the mountain and saying like, okay, that's enough for me. I just want to phone in my work and be with my kids. And I don't care if I'm running a company. I actually respect that. You know what you want and what balance you want. So I pushed a little bit higher up past some of that adversity because I love this industry and I was willing to push up to the higher level. And my kids know that I have a work-life balance and that I'm trying to contribute to them and to the community. But it's not easy juggling all of that. And I think the best thing that you can do is just work on yourself so that you can lead others and be open to helping others. And, you know, my team helps me be where I am. I'm nothing without our team. And so I try to set a good example from them and learn from them at the same time.
I also think to your note around confidence and understanding yourself, I think also like empathy is such an important part of that, because once you're able to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand, like, you know, from a holistic standpoint, like all the factors that kind of contribute to people's experiences, it helps you kind of understand your own role and understand, and that kind of informs your own confidence and your ability to kind of like move forward along your own path, whatever that might be as well.
Yeah. And you know, we're constantly like, there's so much available out there to help us be our best selves, right? And you don't have to join the fanciest gym. You just go outside every day and walk for 20 minutes. And you don't have to, you know, be the best ski racer in the world, but just pick something that you love to do and do it. And, you know, aside from our book club reading Reese's Next Pick or whatever, we do intersperse it with biographies of people that are interesting, you know, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, like, who do you want to learn from? And health books, Outlive by Dr. Peter Attia, about, you know, being your best self, being your strongest self, being your truest self, whatever your religion or your spiritual journey, having like a higher being that you aspire to and being kind and caring about community. I mean, I attribute a lot of that to the upbringing that I had. Like my father, rest in peace, you know, used to say to me, like, it's not about how popular you are, or how wealthy you are. It's about doing what you love, giving back, and being able to look at yourself in the mirror at the end of the day and like who you see. So, you know, there's a lot of people, the expression eat what you kill. I don't like that expression. You know, I think the company doing well together, and Elevation just had its 10th year anniversary, and we have an amazing array of important films that we're all proud of, and everybody celebrates those wins together because we're all pieces of one big nice puzzle. And rewarding people and encouraging them. Like, there's one gentleman in our company who's been helping in business affairs, and We sent him to do the Osgoode Certificate in Entertainment Law. And if somebody wants to, they're very good, but they can't project their voice, great, go do a class in public speaking. Like, we want people to be improving themselves so that they not only feel more fulfilled, but also that in turn helps the company. It's win-win.
Yeah, yeah. I guess building on that, you know, Elevation Pictures recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Within that time, obviously so much has happened, from a global pandemic to industry spanning strikes. What's the biggest lesson that you've learned about leading a company over the past decade that you're taking with you into the next decade?
Yeah, also a good question. I mean, first of all, if you're ever starting a new company, I want to share that it's very important to pick your investors and your partners carefully, because you are in it together. It's like picking a spouse, right? You're doing a lot together, and you want to make sure that you've shared values and shared vision. And so when we launched Elevation 10 years ago, and Creative Artists Agency had introduced us to a bunch of potential investors, and we chose, thankfully, Teddy Schwarzman of Black Bear, because, well, first and foremost, he was a very nice guy and very smart. And in addition to being well capitalized, had a vision for a growth. And we've been part of that growth as he's now expanded with Black Bear International, Black Bear UK. He's also producing amazing films, Imitation Game, Naiad, which was on Netflix, et cetera. So finding the right partners is very important. The second thing that's really important is to be able to pivot. So when COVID hits and the theater shut down, so there's no films playing in theaters, but we have some titles that are finished that have been delivered, and people are sitting at home bored. So the over the top, the streamers were looking for content, and were willing to play them a premium video on demand. So what would have been the theatrical window, people pay a little bit more, or they just pay for an outright premiere and premiere it on the service. So we were able to pivot into that world. Our publicity team had to be very innovative, because we went through Toronto Film Festivals, which was like a hybrid online digital version, and then a few people come but not everybody version, and then last year's SAG strike again. So, you know, the large parties and the talent coming and the sponsors and all that fun just doesn't happen, and you have to find a way to create the same excitement and eventize your films. And also to be able to pivot just, you know, in growing. So as I mentioned at the outset, certain films we can't buy because Apple and Netflix and Amazon and everybody is acquiring content in addition to making content. So my partner Noah Siegel with our company started a production division 4 years ago. We started to produce films like French Exit, which we then sold to Sony, and Infinity Pool with Neon, which premiered at Sundance. And so I don't think it makes sense to diversify too much. Like, I think if you overextend and you're in sports and you're in magazines and you're in fashion and you're in film, you can sort of lose your focus a little bit, but within whatever your core competency is, to build on that. And so how do we eventize films so that people don't just say, like, I personally don't get offended, but I don't love when people say, oh my God, Zone of Interest looks so good. When's it on Netflix? And it's like, go see it in a theater. Because to me, that shared experience of whether it's a, you know, a comedy that you're laughing together, or a love story that you're moved together, or a horror film that you're scared together, or an important film that you sort of digest together, you know, to me, it's just that storytelling that really matters. And then back to just being able to pivot around whatever obstacles are thrown at you and learn, you know, be willing to learn. The film industry, nobody bats 1,000, right? Even the best baseball players don't bat 500. So as much as we love all our babies, they're not going to all make money, right? But you do the best you can with whatever film you have. You try to find that audience. And so you might even, we hire outside agencies to help us lean into communities that we might not otherwise reach. So Past Lives is a beautiful, now nominated for Best Picture film that A24 released, which we saw at Sundance and loved and bought. And it's like a sweet love story that resonates, but it also leans into the immigrant experience and the Korean experience. And so we'll hire an outside agency to help us reach that community in addition to reaching, right? So we lean in to try to get people that might not otherwise come to the theater, hey, we've got something great that will really speak to you and beyond. And to us, it's engaging those people to like be like, wow, that really moved me. I always sort of wondered if what it would have been like if I ended up with my high school sweetheart or whatever. That, you know, people at the water cooler talk politics, but they also talk about, did you see this show? Did you see this movie? It gets people sharing and caring, and we love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so beautiful. So what's your greatest hope for the next 10 years for the industry and for your business?
A very good question too. I mean, I do think that the theatrical experience should maintain its prominence. I'm a strong believer that if you were lucky enough to have a comfortable home to be in during the pandemic, that's lovely, but we are social creatures. You know, you can work out at home. I personally got very bored of it. I'm back at the gym. You can make a drink at home. I personally don't make them as well as the bar. Plus, I want the other people. You can cook at home. Again, I'm not as good a cook. My husband is. I still go out for dinner. So I think the theatrical experience maintaining its significance and get people. Some people are still stuck on their When's It on Netflix couch, and it's time to get out of the house. I hope there is a continued innovation in the space of new stories and new voices and diversity. And I also hope that even though the streamers are helping our business and we want them to continue to be strong, I would like to not see everything go right to platform with a tiny little theatrical release to qualify for the Oscars. I think it's important to like keep all of the streams alive, right? So the theatrical first, which has the marketing to maintain the interest, and then some people can rent it or get the video on at home to own it, and then it will be on Netflix, and maybe you'll watch it again. But the sort of waiting until it's at that stage, I mean, it would be to me like the news happens and then you read it a month later. Like, stay current on what's happening and stay excited about it and keep supporting each other. I'm very win-win person. When I was in law school, somebody told me that I should be a litigator. And I was like, I don't want to be a litigator. That's win-lose. Right? So I like telling stories that people are interested in. And as I said, I have two university age kids and they're going to the theaters, like they're bored of being on their devices and they want to be moved. And they were so proud of everything everywhere all at once and so engaged with it. And to them, really, it was about mental health. Like they really leaned into to Stephanie's character, really struggling her relationship with her mother and being who she was and being second generation immigrant and not following their path. Like that younger generation really leaned into that almost more than the fantastical multiverse elements of it. And so everybody gets something else out of, and so my dream is that Elevation keeps delivering that content to move the world forward.
I also think that, you know, post-pandemic, you know, going to the movies is like, it's an event and an experience. And some of our most formative memories are around the movies that we saw in theaters as a kid or as a teenager or whatever it might be. Like, I still remember the first movie I ever went to. And I remember that day and exactly what was happening. And like, I don't remember anything from that time of my life except for that point. So it's just like, it's everything that kind of orbits around that and kind of contributes to being excited about something and celebrating something. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, like the community and being with other people as well.
It's right. It's, and that's why representation is so important on the screen, because, you know, again, back to like, how did I get into what I got into? Like, you'll see, I don't know, a young girl will see Legally Blonde and be like, I can go to Harvard, right? Or just whatever. Yeah. Or you see yourself, or I don't have to go to Harvard. I can own a flower store and in a small town and be happy with my life because I'm, you know, working nature in my garden, whatever it is. Like you consume, there's so much content out there and we get ideas and then there's something we really relate to and feel passionate about. And those stories build who we are. And so this is why I don't love violent films. I know they exist as well, but I don't love giving violent ideas. I want to like inspire people to, I don't know, find their best self. And there's a lot of that in the movies because, you know, a lot of movies are just storytelling and everyone has a story.
And reflection of our lives and reflection of culture.
Exactly.
Last question. Our podcast is called Mission Critical. So we obviously talk about mission and purpose. And the way we like to end our interviews is just asking, like, what is your mission at the end of the day?
My mission is to try to make the world a better place. And so whether that's inspiring young women, giving back to the community through some charitable work that we do with our company, to our obvious business purpose of telling stories, inspiring audiences, supporting creative new voices, and having that shared experience, because I really do, not to sound hokey, think that it's a very beautiful world we have out there. And we shouldn't take it for granted. We should open to our eyes to the beauties that are out there and like stop fighting with each other over silly things and find a common ground and find a way to use the power of storytelling to realize we're all just the same. We have heartbreak and dreams and hard days and good days. We fall in love, we fall out of love, but we're here once and there's a lot of beauty, and let's lean into it together and through storytelling make the world a better place.
I love that. I love that so much. Thank you so much for your time and this wonderful chat. I really enjoyed it. And I really, really love the work that you're putting out into the world and the influence and impact that it has. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. And go to the movies.
Definitely. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?